Be great to be back with you this morning. Definitely appreciate the opportunity again, and hopefully anytime Bobby can't make it, he'll call me to fill in for him again, because I really do love being here. This morning I want to start off by reading the story of Cain and Abel. So if you would please turn to Genesis chapter 4. Genesis chapter 4. And that's where we will begin this morning. And I will start off by reading verses 1 through 15. Genesis 4, verses 1 through 15. Now the man had relations with his wife Eve, and she conceived and gave birth to Cain. And she said, I have gotten a man-child with the help of the Lord. Again she gave birth to his brother Abel. And Abel was a keeper of flocks, but Cain was a tiller of the ground. So it came about in the course of time that Cain brought an offering to the Lord of the fruit of the ground. Abel, on his part, also brought of the firstlings of his flock and of their fat portions. And the Lord had regard for Abel and for his offering. But for Cain and for his offering he had no regard. So Cain became very angry, and his countenance fell. Then the Lord said to Cain, Why are you angry, and why has your countenance fallen? If you do well, will not your countenance be lifted up? And if you do not do well, sin is crouching at the door, and its desire is for you, but you must master it. Cain told Abel his brother, and it came about when they were in the field that Cain rose up against Abel his brother and killed him. Then the Lord said to Cain, Where is Abel your brother? And he said, I do not know. Am I my brother's keeper? He said, What have you done? The voice of your brother's blood is crying to me from the ground. Now you are cursed from the ground, which has opened its mouth to receive your brother's blood from your hand. When you cultivate the ground, it will no longer yield its strength to you. You will be a vagrant and a wanderer on the earth. Cain said to the Lord, My punishment is too great to bear. Behold, you have driven me this day from the face of the ground, and from your face I will be hidden, and I will be a vagrant and a wanderer on the earth, and whoever finds me will kill me. So the Lord said to him, Therefore, whoever kills Cain, vengeance will be taken on him sevenfold. And the Lord appointed a sign for Cain, so that no one finding him would slay him. What Cain did can ultimately be described as a terrible and a disgusting act. The murder of another human being. This is the very first murder that ever happened on earth. And unfortunately, mankind hasn't stopped since. There's been a lot of murders then. There's a lot of murders still even today. But this was the very, very first one. But as unsettling as it is, Cain gave us a lot of examples, you know, even throughout just this one chapter. He gave us a lot of examples of what not to do. And that's the title of the lesson this morning, is how Cain showed us what not to do. Because there are a few instances where we can definitely learn from his mistakes. And we need to learn from them so that we don't repeat them ourselves. And specifically this morning, I want to look at three things, three mistakes that Cain made that we can learn from. So again, we're going to be focusing on three mistakes that Cain made that we ourselves can learn from. The first one, and it might sound obvious to all of us, but we still need to cover it anyway. We cannot murder another human being. We need to always keep this in mind, especially in the world that we're living in today. Unfortunately, murder rates are on the rise. You know, it's like a lot of people these days don't have any respect for human life. They don't have that regard, that respect for it. They just decide, you know, they can kill whoever they want. They can do whatever they want to anybody else. And that's definitely not the right attitude that we had. And especially with these random killings. You know, if you're anything like my mom, you watch a ton of crime shows, which really bugs me sometimes. But a lot of the crime shows, it happens with, you know, random killings. You know, maybe it's a robbery, maybe, you know, somebody was in the wrong place at the wrong time, they end up dead. So we need to keep this in mind, especially considering the society that we live in and how violent it is becoming and how it's kind of steering towards more violence, unfortunately. And to illustrate this point, firstly, if you would turn to Leviticus. Leviticus chapter 24, and that's what we're going to be looking at for now. Leviticus 24. And we're going to be looking at verse 21, Leviticus 24, verse 21. It says in Leviticus 24:21, "Thus the one who kills an animal shall make it good, but the one who kills a man shall be put to death." This is a command for capital punishment, for killing those who kill others. Throughout the nation, we have some states who still use capital punishment. Missouri is actually one of those states. And in fact, Missouri has actually executed, I think, a prisoner each month the last 5 or 6 months. And obviously another notorious place that is known for capital punishment is Texas. And there are several states that still use that form of punishment. There are some states who have steered away from that. But that was the punishment, you know, back in the Old Testament. You know, if somebody kills a man, they need to be put to death themselves. And in a lot of ways, that I believe that law can apply to today. Like I said, a lot of states still use that form of punishment. So that's one thing we can kind of learn, you know, that one, that murder is wrong, and two, that there are consequences for doing that. And obviously a big consequence in a lot of states, and obviously back in the Israelite days, or, you know, a life for a life. If you kill somebody, you yourself are going to be killed for that crime. And if you would turn back a chapter to Exodus now, Exodus chapter 20. Exodus 20, verse 13 is where we're going to be looking at. Exodus 20 and verse 13. And it's only four words there, but it says, "You shall not murder." This is one of the Ten Commandments that were given by God to the Israelites. Again, just a few words, but it's very clear. You shall not murder. We are commanded never to kill another human being. Never to do that. Again, a human life is very sacred, and we need to respect that. We need to respect other lives. And finally, if you would, let's look at a New Testament example of this in 1 John. If you would turn to 1 John. 1 John chapter 3. 1 John chapter 3, verse 15. 1 John 3, verse 15. "Everyone who hates his brother is a murderer, and you know that no murderer has eternal life abiding in him." So again, this is another example, but this is a little different here, a little different. It says here that even if we hate our fellow brother, that is considered murder. You know, it's a sin to hate our fellow Christians, you know, and as the New Testament points out, that's considered like murder if we hate our fellow Christians. So we need to strive ourselves to really be kind to our fellow Christians, to appreciate their lives. Because again, without your fellow Christians, we probably wouldn't be here. We probably wouldn't be able to help lift each other up and encourage each other. Wouldn't be able to worship together, you know. If there's any human life that you need to respect, it's those of your Christian brother, your Christian sister out there. So again, if we hate our fellow Christians, that is just like murder. So we need to keep that in mind as well in our lives. Second point this morning of why what we can learn from Cain, what not to do, is that we must be willing to offer a good and a proper sacrifice to God. As we can see here in Genesis chapter 4, Cain's sacrifice was not accepted by God. It was not an acceptable sacrifice. However, Abel made a sacrifice that was acceptable to God. And that's where the conflict started. That's where Cain felt really bad. And he said his countenance fell. You know, he felt really bad. And eventually he killed Abel, probably out of jealousy, perhaps. But we ourselves need to make our sacrifices acceptable to God. We need to make sure that God will accept them and that they are pleasing to Him. And if you would turn to Hebrews now, Hebrews chapter 13. Hebrews chapter 13. And we'll be looking at verse 16 specifically. So Hebrews 13 and verse 16. It says there, "And do not neglect doing good and sharing, for with such sacrifice God is pleased." And I think it's pretty clear the message here in verse 16. We must always be on our toes to do good and to do good works. And there's a lot of things that we can do in this instance. You know, it says to do good and to share. You know, there's a lot of things that we can share. We can share our time. You know, we can always make time for people if they need it. We can always make sure we give somebody, you know, a few minutes of our time. You know, maybe it's money that we can sacrifice. Obviously, we're commanded to, you know, to give how we are prospered to the church. You know, maybe we can give to other worthwhile organizations as well. You know, that's something we can give. You know, there's other resources we can give. You know, perhaps food is another good one, especially for those who are hungry, or maybe those who have recently lost a loved one and maybe need some food cooked for them, or those who are sick and are not able to fully take care of themselves at that time. You know, there is so much we can give, you know, just in your lives. Just think of, you know, what talents you have, you know. Maybe you're good at making quilts, you know, and you can make a quilt for somebody, you know, who has trouble staying warm in the winter or something, just a good gift that way. You know, maybe you can, you know, donate clothes or something to somebody. You know, there's a lot of things we can do in order to sacrifice. And again, it says in verse 16, you know, with such sacrifice, God is pleased. God is pleased with those sacrifices that we give. You know, it's a lot easier to hold on to our money. It's a lot easier to use our time to do what we want, you know. But those sacrifices, they please God. And we need to keep that in mind. Even though those sacrifices aren't always the easiest to make, we need to make sure to be willing to sacrifice all that we can when we can. You know, and especially, you know, probably the greatest resource we can give is love. Because why give somebody, you know, clothes if it's not out of love? You know, why give somebody, you know, food if it's not out of love? You know, it needs to come from that good heart, from that right heart, you know, that good attitude. And love's the greatest thing we can give, honestly, even if it's not a physical thing like food or like clothing or like money. You know, maybe somebody just needs a hug. You know, that's out of love. We can give that. Maybe somebody just wants to talk, you know, wants to let out their emotions or, you know, or instances like that. You know, love is the greatest thing that we can give as a sacrifice. And we all need to always keep that in mind, you know, especially for those who are in need and for those around us, and especially for our fellow Christians. And secondly, if you would, now turn to Romans chapter 12. Let's go to Romans chapter 12. And we'll be looking at the first verse in Romans chapter 12. So Romans 12 and verse 1. It says there, "Therefore I urge you, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies a living and holy sacrifice, acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship." Again, we must be willing to sacrifice. And specifically, it says to sacrifice our bodies in a holy and in a spiritual way. You know, I know as the years go on, bodies can break down and bodies can wear down. I know, you know, at the young age of 25 that I am now, I still have some old running injuries that give me some trouble. You know, my right hamstring, it gives me a lot of trouble even today, and I injured it several years ago. You know, if I sleep funny and I wake up in the morning, it can bother me. If I exercise too much, it can really start to bother me. And one thing I do when I'm subbing sometimes to disgust my kids sometimes is I can actually make my hamstring pop. So if any of you want to hear it pop after services, I'd be more than happy to share that with you. But, you know, like I said, you know, as time goes on, it can be hard, you know, to give our bodies as a sacrifice, because, you know, we get older, we get weary. You know, we have these physical ailments. But we need to use them as a sacrifice. And there's a lot of ways we can do that. You know, obviously physical labor is one way, you know, or doing something like that, maybe, you know, painting, you know, the church, or painting for somebody who needs it. You know, there's a lot of ways we can do that, you know. We must be ready to worship and to serve God in any way that we can, and that uses our bodies in a lot of ways. You know, obviously singing, you know, that uses our bodies, that uses our vocal cords, and that's another way we can sacrifice to God, and that we can worship God in that way. And we need to keep in mind, especially about persecutions, you know. Unfortunately, Christians in this country are being more persecuted today than they were 10 or 15 years ago. You know, our faith is under attack more than it has been in recent memory. You know, and that can hurt us, you know. And, you know, you've probably read on the news examples of people who have physically paid the price for their faith, you know. People have, you know, beat them up or spat on them or, you know, hurt them even mentally by calling them names, you know. There's a lot of ways that it can hurt our bodies, you know, to sacrifice God. But we still need to continue on and do that, even if it hurts us, even if our bodies suffer. And think of people in foreign countries who are not supposed to worship God, where the Bible is illegal, countries like that. If they're found out, they're going to die in a lot of cases. They're going to be put to death, or they're going to be maimed or tortured somehow. Look back early in the New Testament, you know, around that time, you know, the Romans, for the most part, didn't like Christians. There were a few emperors that allowed Christianity, but for the most part, you know, they were tortured. I believe it was the Emperor Nero who used to take Christians and use them as torches in his garden. He would, you know, set them up and light them on fire, and that's how he lit his gardens at night. But no matter how much it can hurt our bodies, and even though, again, we do get older and our bodies do fail us in some ways, we always need to strive to make those sacrifices, even if it can hurt us physically, even if it's just uncomfortable physically. You know, maybe you have trouble getting out, you know, of your home, but you know that somebody who is worse off than you needs a meal brought to them or needs something else like that brought to them. You know, that's another way we can sacrifice. So don't be afraid to get out of your comfort zone, even if it can physically, you know, make you uncomfortable or hurt you sometimes. You know, that's just a sacrifice that we need to be prepared to make as Christians. We must always strive to sacrifice whatever we can to serve God. And again, it's not just our bodies, it's not just our resources. It can be our love, it can be our time. Anything that we can do, we always need to be prepared to sacrifice what we can. Always. Always. And thirdly, and this is the point where, you know, Cain tried to dismiss his responsibility, but it ended up backfiring on him in a big way. We must be our brother's keeper. And I want to read that passage again in Genesis, in verse 9 of chapter 4. So Genesis 4, verse 9, I'm going to read that again one more time. And it says there, "Then the Lord said to Cain, 'Where is Abel your brother?' And he said, 'I do not know. Am I my brother's keeper?'" So we see here, Cain tried to dismiss, you know, the fact that Abel was gone. Cain knew what he had done. He knew that he had murdered Abel. And God knew. You know, obviously you can't put anything past God. But Cain still tried to dismiss it. He said, "Well, but it's not my responsibility. Am I my brother's keeper? You know, why do I have to look out for him? Why do I have to watch over him? It's not my responsibility. You know, it's not my problem." And that's definitely the wrong attitude to have. He tried to dismiss that responsibility as Abel's brother. And while this is very sad, many Christians do this to one another. You know, we sometimes can be like, "Well, that person over there who's a Christian, they're not my responsibility." You know, or "That person there, you know, they're not my responsibility. I'm not their keeper. I'm not supposed to watch over them. It's not my problem." And we as Christians, we really need to strive to not get caught up in that negative attitude. We need to really strive to not get caught in that trap of, "Oh, well, it's not my problem. It's not my responsibility." You know, that lack of caring. We really need to avoid that. If you would, turn back to 1 Samuel chapter 23. 1 Samuel 23. And throughout this portion of 1 Samuel, it shows what is, in my opinion, I'm sure the opinion of a lot of you, one of the greatest friendships, not only in the Bible, but ever. One of the greatest friendships ever. And that is the friendship of David and Jonathan. And if you would look specifically in 1 Samuel 23 at verse 16. 1 Samuel 23, verse 16. Now keep in mind at this time, before we go into this passage, that David is in exile right now because King Saul wants to kill David. He's jealous of David. He knows that eventually David is going to become king and take his place. And Saul doesn't want that. So Saul did pretty much everything he could in his power to try to kill David. But that put Jonathan, David's best friend, in an awkward situation because Jonathan was Saul's son. Now, just imagine being in that situation for a second. You have a best friend who's like a brother or like a sister to you, someone you're very, very, very close to. And not only does your dad not like that person, your dad is actively trying to kill that person who is your best friend. And, you know, that must have been a very, very tough thing for Jonathan, a very confusing time, just a very hurtful time in a lot of ways for him. And yet, in verse 16, it says, "And Jonathan, Saul's son, arose and went to David at Horesh and encouraged him in God." That takes a lot of guts by Jonathan. You know, his dad, who is the most powerful man in the kingdom, being the king obviously, is trying anything he can to kill David. And yet, Jonathan goes to David and he tries to encourage him. You know, that took a lot of guts. Let's say that Saul found out what Jonathan did. How mad would have Saul been at his own son? You think Jonathan might have been killed? I think that's a possibility. You know, and obviously, probably the first thing Saul would have asked Jonathan, "Where is David? Where is he? Tell me where he is." And being the good friend that Jonathan was, he probably wouldn't have told. And that could have put him in very dire consequences with his own father and with the entire kingdom in general. And again, that just shows the great attitude, the great spirit that Jonathan had. He went to encourage his friend, not only when his friend was completely down, but when it could have been at risk to Jonathan himself. We need to use this example. We need to always be willing to go and encourage our fellow Christians, especially when they're down, especially when they're persecuted. And even when the obstacles, like in this instance, are huge. You know? As Christians, we're going to face obstacles, some very big, some very small, but we don't have to face them alone. We can lean on each other, and that's what we're commanded to do. And we need to use that example that Jonathan did. We really need to go out of our way to encourage somebody when they're down, even if it could put us at risk, because that's when people need it the most. And finally, this is the final passage we're going to look at this morning. If you would turn to 1 Thessalonians. 1 Thessalonians. First Thessalonians 5 is where we're going to be looking at specifically. So if you would turn there, 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, and we'll be looking at verse 11. 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 11. And I think that this is the quintessential passage of how to treat your fellow Christian. "Therefore, encourage one another and build up one another, just as you are also doing." And that says it right there. As Christians, we are encouraged to build each other up and to encourage one another. Obviously, back in Genesis chapter 4, you know, Cain was very, very discouraged. You know, he was not a very happy camper, as some would say. And he let that get the best of him. And I want to look back there real quick, a few things that God said to him. And in chapter 7, you know, God warned Cain. It said, "And if you do not do well, sin is crouching at the door." You know, he told Cain, you know, there's sin around the corner if you don't change your attitude, if you don't get right. But he didn't get right. He didn't actively seek that. He didn't, you know, get lifted up, didn't get encouraged. And because of that, his brother ended up dead by his own hand, you know, by Cain's hand. He murdered Abel. You know, we need to build each other up. Just imagine, you know, what if you don't build somebody up? You know, what could happen in their lives? And that's something we always really need to think about when someone's down. You know, maybe if we're not the one who encourages them, they'll walk out those doors and they'll never come back. Ever. And that's a very sad thing. But it's a reality. It has happened before, and unfortunately, it'll probably happen again sometime, you know, throughout, you know, the church. And it's just a sad thing to see. We have to encourage each other. It's just plain and simple, no matter how hard it can be. We need to keep that responsibility to be the keepers of each other. We can't be like Cain and just dismiss it and go, well, you know, they're not worth my time. Well, I really, really don't care about them, you know. Well, maybe I can do it next week, you know, because next week might be too late, honestly. You know, if we have an advantage and an opportunity to encourage somebody, we need to do it right then and there. We always need to encourage and build each other up as we are commanded. We need to really take that example like Jonathan. And there's a lot of other examples of that. Obviously, I know I talked about Barnabas the last time I was here, I believe. You know, his nickname was Son of Encouragement. You know, don't you want that to be your attribute, to be, you know, really encouraging to somebody? And that's something we need to strive to do. And again, you know, from Cain, we can learn a lot, not what to do. You know, obviously, we can't kill somebody else. That is wrong. There's no excuse for it. You know, we just can't go off and murder somebody in cold blood. We need to respect the lives of others. And we just can't get into that kind of behavior, especially in a world that is growing more violent. We need to make those sacrifices, those good and those proper sacrifices to God. We need to be willing to give to Him. We need to be willing to give to each other. And we really need to strive to do that every day, even if it's uncomfortable at times, even if it can be difficult at times. And we really have to be our brother's keeper, as Cain was not. We need to really encourage one another. We really need to look out for each other and keep each other together, no matter how difficult that can be sometimes. Maybe this morning you need that kind of encouragement. Maybe this morning what you're giving to God or what you're giving to others is not enough, and you know that you need to be doing more. Maybe you need to put on Christ in baptism today, and you need to start your journey of encouraging and of sacrificing. If you have any need this morning, please come forward as we stand and as we sing.